Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by MyMedEquipped. Now, we've been a big believer in them and all their gear since the start of this podcast, and you'll be able to get 10% off anything you buy if you use the code TSPP10. I'll pop that down in the show notes along with the link to their website. Make sure you go check them out and get all your gear for 2021. Today, I'm sitting with Corey.
Hey guys, how are you going?
And we are sitting with the Free Radicals Paramedic Podcast. They're going to give us a bit of an introduction about themselves. We've got Nick, Hayden and Aaron.
I'm Nick. I'm a critical care paramedic out at Ipswich. I currently work for the Queensland Ambulance Service been with them for about 10 years now. Been doing the podcast with the boys for a few years and loving it.
Hi, my name's Hayden. Nick and I are both CCPs and traditionally working out of Ipswich in an educational role at the moment, but my incumbent position's at Ipswich working for the Queensland Ambulance Service. I think something that Nick and Aaron probably may or may not mention, but we also work for a bunch of different other organisations between universities and private companies as well. So when we talk about this stuff, we've been doing podcasts for a couple of years, but it's probably important to sort of make mention that we do express our own views and it's not of our organisation. So hopefully we'll be able to get some stuff that might be a bit controversial and a bit of fun.
Hey guys, I'm Aaron. I'm an advanced care paramedic working in the Metro South region of Queensland. And like Hayden said, I'm also a sessional teacher down at Griffith University, their paramedicine program. When it comes to student life, I've only not been a student now for 2 years, so pretty much got this topic down packed at the moment with a few degrees in science and the physician assistant degree as well.
Very nice. So we were gonna have a chat about graduate and that transition from student to graduate. However, the Free Radicals have an amazing episode on all things graduate and transitioning to that. So if you want to hear about that, head over to their podcast. So today we're focusing more on students. So our first question for these guys is, how do students put their best foot forward when going on placement?
What I would say is that when you start a placement, have a goal of what you want to obtain in that short time period. So if it is something around skills like cannulation, ventilation, taking a history, choose a few things that you want to knuckle down on and use that to influence how you go about your placement time and have things where you can be like where you can measure what you're doing and if you're getting better at it, and have that conversation with your mentors. So if it is, look, I really want to get down a good clinical history so I can focus on what pathologies I think this patient has and build a reasonable differential and then treat from there. Then they'll be able to sort of guide you in what, you know, they think you need to do on road to keep it in that acute manner. But then also, you know, when you can relax a bit when those cases aren't acute, because, you know, unfortunately, probably less than 1% of our cases these days, well, not unfortunately, but as it drills down, that less than 1% is probably truly life-threatening. And the vast majority is, you know, you've got a bit more time. So that's probably the best advice I would have for someone who's going on road, and step that up every single time so you're adding to your repertoire. What do you reckon, Nick?
I'd agree. You really need to have that conversation with your mentor about setting the direction of your placement. I always encourage students to have a book or a notepad in their pocket on placement. And that way, whenever you go to a job and there's something you don't understand, formulate a question and write it down. If your mentor asks you something and you're not sure, write it down, okay? That way you're helping yourself to identify the gaps in your practice and allowing you to identify areas that can guide your study when you get home after your shift. And that's what I see is part of the goal of your placement, is to help you and for your mentor to help you identify the gaps in your knowledge, okay? I think it's really important that the student sets the direction. You know, especially in Southeast Queensland, a lot of paramedics are they might be very tired, they're quite busy. They may not necessarily want to ramp up their downtime to do additional things and training and so forth. And don't expect them to come to you and initiate those additional tasks, training, skill sessions, whiteboard sessions, and that kind of thing. So I think that stuff that needs to happen needs to be initiated by the student. And I think that will help you to get the most out of your placement. Hayden?
When you're new at something, we need to appreciate that everything we do from a technical aspect is going to take up more of our mindset, our conscious mind. And when you're on placement, this might be the first time that you really get the good opportunity to sort of delve into all the different bits of kit that we have. And realistically, you should have an unlimited time to do that, whether it's a time on station or time during a job whilst the patients at the hospital, you're doing cleanup at the hospital. You have an extended period of time to be able to get familiarize yourself with all this stuff. And it might sound laborious or a little bit sort of low key, but what this does is increases your familiarity with it and will subsequently lead to a decreased cognitive capacity utilization during jobs and during cases. So if every shift this could fall into what Aaron was talking about in terms of having deliberate practice or had deliberate goals around what are you wanting to achieve out of each day or each placement. If every shift you're mastering a different or the same piece of equipment over and over, when it comes to going to a cardiac arrest patient and you have something as simple as setting up the BVM, you don't have to have the cognitive headspace to work out how to connect up the oxygen cylinder, how to turn it on, how to troubleshoot it should there be a problem, how to pull the stuff out. You can do that sort of second nature in your subconscious, and it frees up your headspace to be able to do the more sort of higher order thinking surrounding decision making and troubleshooting surrounding what's actually going on with the clinical case. So my advice is really, really drill down on your technical know-how and know your equipment inside and out, and that will then facilitate that one. It'll probably impress your mentors and sort of get you some buy-in with them. But from a know-how progressive perspective, you're not going to be sort of saturated with all the sort of things that you probably could have learned otherwise. It'll help sort of with that higher order thinking. Second thing I can probably throw back as a question back to the other boys. Gentlemen, how do you think about attitude impacts people on placement?
I don't see this too often, but there are some students who are a little bit too eager. And maybe you have come from a different background, like maybe you used to be a nurse or you worked for an ambulance service overseas and you're getting your qualification here. When you're that, I guess, exuberant with how keen you are and you're trying to sort of say that you know everything, unfortunately, that doesn't come across very well because, you know, this is a different environment. There's a reason why some doctors don't, work in our environment as well, because they don't have the comfort of the four walls and everyone around them. And it's great to bring in your different experiences and, then grow in this pre-hospital environment. But to announce that you can do everything and anything and you've been to everything when you aren't out of the degree is probably setting the wrong foot forward. I think it's much better to sort of take things as they come, get to know who your mentors are, get to know how they work, and then infiltrate the team that way so you find what your role is. And how you can best, adapt to that team and then build trust. You know, like the words can only really do so much. Provide the actions that, you know, you you have, like what Hayden has said before, you've drilled down in those skills. So you've got that muscle memory to, you know, set up a BVM or, you know, do a 12 lead in quick time. Let your actions speak for you and then build from there as, you know, your mentors are getting gain confidence in your set, in your practice, and allow you to do more. Nick, do you have anything to add?
I think the biggest thing that I think people could generally work on is just coming and making the most of that time by asking lots of questions. If you're having downtime at station, I don't want you to be sitting on your phone on Twitter or Tinder or Facebook. That's not a good utilization of your placement time. So get up, find someone. If it's not your mentors, if they're having a rest, that's fine. Ask another paramedic, ask a CCP, ask an educator, or go do something yourself. Even if it's just going, getting the keys off your mentor, going to the ambulance and just familiarizing yourself with the basic setup of the ambulance, do something. Don't sit around on placement either. It's a pet peeve of mine.
On that pet peeve situation, what are your thoughts about when students come in, you go, how was your day? And the student goes, oh, no, I haven't done anything. Can you shine a different light on, if I'm a student, I come back to the station going, oh, no, I've just done sort of rubbish all day. Can you shine a different light on that for me?
Yeah, so I think, what's your definition of rubbish? And I think that's a student's misinterpretation of what is a valued job. So I think maybe people come into paramedicine either thinking that everything's an emergency and going to uni and only being taught emergency skills and emergency scenarios and all this big stuff. And then they come out on road and see that a large percentage of the cases that we go to are not that. And rather than seeing that that large percentage of work is our normal work and a part of the role of the paramedic is to respond to that and treat those patients, they see it as, all that work isn't worthy of my time, or it's not worthy of a paramedic, or it's time wasting. Therefore, it's warrants less value to me. And I think that's the wrong attitude to have. If I can say anything to students, is to understand that not everything we go to is an emergency. And Aaron said this earlier about the 1% being significant life-threatening emergencies. The reality of the pre-hospital environment is that a large percentage of our work are not emergencies and are not life-threatening, and that's just how it is. And part of the expectation of you as a paramedic is to attend those patients with no bias and to give them the same respect, care, and time as someone having a heart attack, someone having a significant a fracture, or someone having another emergency. Now, that's not easy to do. That's like cultural shift, and that's getting rid of your own biases and your subconscious beliefs about things. And hey, I can happily put my hand up and say that I've gone to a few low acuity cases thinking this is worth my time. If you say you haven't as a paramedic, then you're lying. However, it's something that we need to remind ourselves of, whether you're qualified or whether you're a student, is that this work that we sometimes perceive as crap or rubbish or a waste of time is part of the role and is as important as everything else. And you know what? Sometimes those patients are really sick and you need to get rid of those biases to appreciate that.
I love the quotes you guys have said before. One of them being like, it might not be an emergency to you, but it is to that person at that particular point. And also, every case gives you the opportunity to hone your skills. Really, at the end of the day, you can practice your communication skills. You can do all of these different things. And it could be any type of case as well.
You have to remember that the general person in the community doesn't have the health literacy that you and I have. We've had years of study, health education. We can judge things as to whether or not they're emergency or not. The average person can't do that. So when they call 000 for what we perceive to not be an emergency, they can't differentiate that. So why do we blame them or get angry at them or pity them? Because we're advantaged by the education that we're provided.
So not really just the education there, but the yardstick that we're afforded as well. Like when we ask people that are objectively measuring pain scores and we sort of, we don't align ourselves with the sort of objective measure the patient provides, that doesn't mean they're wrong. It means that sort of what we have seen probably skews us from the general public, puts us sort of pretty far away from what the general public has experienced in terms of different sort of criticalities or sort of people experiencing sort of catastrophic amounts of pain. Like, so I think that's really important, Nick, that our judgment, our perspective is different to everyone else's, whether it's just from exposure or from our educational level.
If I go back 9 years ago when, you know, I was doing my time at White Island, entering the Queensland Ambulance Service, and, you know, as they do with all the groups, Steve Rashford comes and has a talk to us and literally says, there is a ton of pathology out there if you're looking for it. And one of the things I've come to realise is that, and most doctors, you know, threw this into my face every single time. It's like, if you're not looking, if you don't understand the pathology of what they could have, then you're going to miss the diagnosis. Same as if you're not thinking of the diagnosis, you're going to miss it, right? Recently, we've just gone through a pandemic, and there's been a ton of women who haven't gone through antenatal care, mainly due to, you know, the restrictions around this pandemic. But there's been a lot of girls rocking up, calling ambulance with abdominal pain, and we've, like, you know, we've missed the topics. You know, people are wheeling in, just going, oh, look, they look fine, you know, they haven't had this, and lo and behold, they're going for a DNC, you know, on arrival at hospital once the guys are going back and putting their paperwork in. So just because you haven't appreciated something doesn't mean that they don't have it either. So you have to sort of really be comfortable with what you do know, what you have been taught. And what you have been taught is literally a small pinpoint in a big library. So just take that with you. Take it with a grain of salt that, you know, you can take that one step further and ask a few more questions and get to know someone a bit better than what you might think is actually going on.
And what's unique and fantastic about, I imagine, a lot of your listeners at the moment, is they're in their sort of learning phase, they're sort of in their undergraduate degree or whatever the sort of educational system looks like for whoever's listening to this podcast. But what's unique about this is you have an opportunity to reframe the concept of what the role you're going into, rather than sort of having this original perception and then getting into it and then sort of having to sort of change it, or either not like it and have a negative attitude or change it then. If you reframe the way you look at this job and what we're there for, our whole purpose from the get-go, you have the opportunity to sort of predispose yourself to an optimistic attitude throughout your career, rather than probably putting yourself on the spectrum of becoming easily jaded or negative. So I think you guys are in a really unique perspective to a situation to really sort of modify and have a fantastic perspective and outlook.
Yeah, awesome. I think that those were some really gold points that you guys just put across. And just going back to that quote that Alex said, that every case gives you the opportunity to hone in your skills. I love that, because I think going into placements as students, we have this thought from watching TV shows or maybe something else that every case is going to be that code one, lights and sirens, cardiac arrest or something like that. But it's the cases where it's not that, where we can build our communication skills, build our rapport and build our systemic processes so that we're ready for cases that may present like that. So awesome. Moving on, what do you think, if you could say one key characteristic of some of the best students that you've seen on placements, what's one key characteristic that you see in a student that just represents someone that's eager to learn and someone that you see as someone that would become a great paramedic?
I think if I think back to one of the best students I've seen, they asked a lot of questions. After every job, they just took the whole thing, whether it's a clinical thing or an operational thing or a logistical thing, said, hey, why do we do this way? What about this? I read this. What do you think of that? Like, they were just inquisitive about everything that was going on about the whole picture. And you can do that. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. Like, I love having a CCP intern or a CCP student, because they make you look at things in a different way. And even after 10 years, you still look at things and go, oh, really, is that the best way to do it? And start looking at all the other ways to skin a cat. And, you know, you'll be doing that for the next 20, 30, 40 years of your career. So a student that can come and take any job or any experience and ask a lot of questions and really see it from different angles and want to break it down, that's a really good student, because they're not only searching for answers, but they're questioning their own belief. And that only leads to growth.
That's the sort of mindset that leads to the growth of our profession as well. Right? So that's in research, that's how we sort of push boundaries and sort of break tradition just for the sake of, like, when tradition is just tradition, like, why do we give adrenaline cardiac arrest? Because it's tradition. So I really, really like that perspective, and that's a really good attitude.
For me, it's someone showing, like, letting their actions speak louder than their actual words. So they're actually doing the job. They're getting in there and they're like becoming a part of the team and noticing the role or the gap that they can fill. So if that is, you know, taking a set of vitals or, you know, announcing like what that patient's respirator is for me without me asking for it. Those are the things that I really sort of like appreciate, is that they're getting hands-on, they're really looking at the patient, and from what, you know, the history that I'm taking, they're collating that together and saying, hey, do you think this could be a possibility because of these things? So they're showing me that, one, in real time, that what learning that they have done and then how they've synthesized that in the case. And I think if when you're doing that sort of stuff, I get blown away more than anything else. So yeah, participate.
That's really good. Yeah. Because reading The Good, the Bad, the Ugly Paramedic by Tammy Bullard, she said that, you know, if you don't know something, you don't need to bluff that you do know it. Just admit it and then learn about it. Just learning from your mistakes or learning from those cases and asking all the questions. So I think that's really cool. But going into that, we touched on it before and you said how to not become jaded in the future. How do students begin to build resilience and really maintain longevity in the job so that they don't become jaded and they maintain that great attitude towards always learning?
Being self-aware of the culture that's out there. There's a spectrum of cultures out there in terms of, like, profound negativity through to optimistic and sort of lifelong learners. So I think being aware of that in the first instance, and no matter where you work, you'll probably experience a whole bunch of the spectrum along there. And one thing you'll learn is that negativity is incredibly cultivating. It sort of can manifest in quite an insidious way, and before you realize, if you've been working with someone who's quite jaded, that can rub off on you without you sort of really realizing until maybe a particular event, and sort of hear yourself. So I think being aware of it in the first step, and the second step of that is try to surround yourself with the right people. So try and surround yourself with positivity, and if that's not in person, try and the professional development you do or the podcast you listen to, try and do that so that you are hearing and at least have exposure to motivated, positive people who are sort of looking to sort of further the profession. And I think that's the first step from an attitudinal perspective, is recognize that negativity is always out there. We're shift workers. We can be flogged all shift. We can be doing, we can be late. We can be hungry, all the cause of sort of the typical thing, hungry, angry, late, tired, stressed. We're human. So I think just recognize that is going to be there. That's a part of it. But be mindful of how we're becoming and not becoming sort of something that perpetuates that negativity. And we usually get in Australia, we get a good amount of holidays, use them wisely. Holidays is as a reset as anything.
You need to understand, like, what sort of like paramedic you want to actually become. So right now you guys are living the Sims life, right? So your patients are plastic mannequins that you probe and push around to sort of get better at your skills. So I would say, you know, do that as much as you can right now. So everything else becomes muscle memory, because you're going into a space where you practice, like you're performing, sorry, more than you practice. So if you look at it from, so like the violin player who's lining up for an orchestra, they'll spend 1,000 hours practicing for a 2-hour performance. you are now doing thousands of hours of performance with whatever practice is your foundation in university. So use it wisely right now. But understand what sort of paramedic that you want to be. So if, like Hayden was saying, when people are negative and they say, well, I don't do this because it doesn't matter, it's not going to change the management or it's not going to change this. When I assess people, I assess them very thoroughly in that medical model. So I get hands-on, I'll feel abdomens, I'll feel different pulses, I'll listen to every single chest, every single heart, I'll do cranial nerves because I know it gives me more information about the differentials that I build up. And people will say to me, you know, that's a waste of time. I'm like, well, it's not a waste of my time because I'm getting better doing this every single time. And like Alex said before, every time you go to someone, you get a chance to practice your communication, your assessment skills, or what have you, depending on what you have. So just be mindful that, like, you have your own individuality and run with what makes you happy in how you attack the job. You know, it's like getting onto a busy highway where, you know, it's blocked with traffic. You know, you find another way because that way is too hard. Don't mess with people who are just trying to bring you down. Be the person that you want to be. I think the other stuff is just self-care. You know, it's exercising, it's getting your diet right. It's looking after yourself with, you know, your hobbies and your days off or your holidays. Like Hayden said, it's optimizing your sleep. It's doing those sort of things day in, day out on a consistent level. So you have the energy to go and do the job that you love doing, but also going to live the life that you love to live.
Definitely, because you are the sum of the five people you spend your most time with, and that's what we get told quite a lot. But I do remember, I don't know if Corey remembers, back in the first week, we got told to write down what type of paramedic we wanted to be and to put it in like an envelope or stow it away somewhere and have a look at it when we graduate. I don't know if I've still got mine. Do you still have yours, Corey?
It's somewhere.
But it's a good thing to remember as well, because will that eager first year student really excited to go to uni and start learning something? And then it is important to reflect back on why you started this thing in the first place. And I think that's really great. So did you guys get taught any ways to cope and build resilience yourself, or did you just have to build those social support networks and basically look out for your own mates as well?
I think where my resilience and it's hard, like, this isn't easy. It's very easy to become negative and upset and disenfranchised, but that you end up in this kind of this like water down the drain. It gets worse and worse and perpetuates it, and you need to find a way to get out of that circling drain. And I think what's helped me a lot is, if you're a qualified paramedic or you're a student or whatever, go to your workplace and have a look around and go, who are the people in here who I want to be? Who are the personalities that have been around, who have good attitudes and they're not burnt out, and they see things in a positive light, and they don't let things get to them? And go to them and have a conversation. Say, hey, how do you do it? What do you do? And learn from those people. Like, there's a few people within the area that I work in that are like that, and I've been to those people to ask them, like, what's your secret? What do you do? And that's been valuable for me. And I think that's really important. So, you know, you can look at a workplace or look at it, and this happens in all workplaces. It isn't necessarily just paramedicine. You can look at a workplace and there's going to be some people that are really happy and positive and see things in an optimistic light. And then there's going to be people who don't. And you got to sit there and ask yourself, who do you want to be? And that's can be very hard, but also recognizing and having the ability to know when you're burnt out and know when you're being really negative. Like, for example, myself, there's certain things at work at the moment that make me quite angry and upset, but can I do anything about it? No. The things that I can do about, you can have an effect there and you can focus your energy on there, but there's certain things you can't. So there's no point in being upset by that. You've got to accept it and move on and see the role in a job for the positive and optimistic factors, not all the negative stuff, because otherwise you just won't survive. I know Hayden, and I'm sure Aaron can speak the same, is that, yeah, finding those positive mentors has been great. And you know what? When we were first qualified paramedics, the person we went to was Scotty Jones. because he was so positive and motivated and optimistic all the time. And he became that mentor for a lot of people, including us. And he still is today.
Yeah, 100% agree. I did that before I got to CCP land. I remember speaking to people who had been in the job, had been sort of all around the job. And one of the core lessons I got from one particular person was change is as good as a holiday. And so changing it up, whether it's changing the location, if you're in a station that it doesn't work well for you, you're not happy with the morale there, then move. If you've tried other things, then move, change it. Don't sink down with everything else that's going on. Move to different roles, whether it be education or whether it be management, whatever you want it to be, whether it be moving through to a low acuity, high acuity, change is fantastic for both you as an individual, but also for broadening that perspective, like we were talking about before the start of this podcast. And then, you know, I really, really agree with what Aaron was talking about earlier, is master, and a lot of this will be through trial and error, is master the self-care aspects of this job. And that extends beyond sort of high acuity, sort of significant jobs. I think that's probably the bigger thing, like what Aaron was talking about in terms of diet, exercising, but also that also extends to those big jobs. And this is something I've honed over the last sort of 10 or so years, is how to have a healthy outlook, and how to process these big ticket items in a healthy way. And I think there's sort of common things we can talk about, whether it be starting with debriefing, exercising, meditating, whatever it may be for you, but trial and error things and work out what works for you. And it has changed throughout my career, and I imagine it'll continue to change. But yeah, work out what works for you and look after yourself.
Just diving into that a bit deeper, I think that a lot of students that I've seen anyway in our cohort, some people struggle with, I guess, turning off after a shift. I mean, we're talking about students who also have full-time jobs or, you know, full-time families, and coming home from a shift, it can be hard to turn off from what's just happened. And there's a lot of people who'll finish a 12-hour shift or finish an 8-hour shift and then go to sleep, and they'll wake up in the night and go, oh my goodness, I've forgotten to do this for this patient, or I've forgotten to restock this. What are some ways that you guys find helpful in terms of switching off?
It's a trial by fire, you know, like that's everyone goes through this all the time. For me, it started with checklists. So every time we use a piece of equipment, I've written it down so I don't forget that. My main passion in this job now is decision making. And you can read a ton of books. There is so much out on like good decisions versus bad decisions, what have you. Just because you think that you've gone to someone who has said some magical words or not, and then you've thought that, hey, I should have done this for them. At the end of the day, hopefully in some ways they're at hospital. You know, you haven't sort of just seen someone who, a 21-year-old male who's got, tells you that they've had a blackout episode, you haven't believed them, but you did 12 lead anyway, and you found dagger cues with right axis deviation and gone, oh, well, it's probably nothing, but it was a hockum. That's unlikely going to happen. But what I would do is I'd journal about what you thought you either did well or what you didn't do well. Because in our situation, there is good luck, there is bad luck. Sometimes there is, you think you've made a good decision, but it's led to the wrong outcome, or you've made a bad decision or a worse decision and you've gotten a good outcome, mainly probably because of your skill set or luck. But have an understanding that it's not just what you do. There is the patient's individual physiology. There's your environment and the team that you're working with. There is your skill set and knowledge as well. And all the things do come together to, you know, create what you think is best in that situation. And if you're always doing the best that you can do at that time and you're trying to improve that, then you're on the right track. One of the best things we learned down in SMAC, well, for me anyway, was becoming 1% better. So when I look at a job and I think, what was that 1% I could do? So if you can journal about those things and then create those steps that you can improve,
you're going to go places. Hopefully it will also offload what's happening in your mind as well.
Yeah, I was about to say that. If you're having trouble offloading and slowing the mind down, journaling can be a really good way to just put those thoughts to paper and moving on. I think, for the last few years, or probably for the most of my career, I've been very career-focused. And, you know, you go to work and you're paramedic-focused and you are on your days off, you're studying and you're doing additional things and taking on additional tasks and responsibilities, and it's work, 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 work. And that's been good for my career. But over time, I think it increases your likelihood of burnout, and it doesn't create great balance within your life. And I think the balance is really important. So something that's helped me in the last year or so is making sure you have a hobby that's completely unrelated to paramedicine. For me, that's diving. And it's something where you can completely switch off away from your career and devote your attention and thought to something completely different. It might be, you know, coaching a kid's soccer team. It might be cardio like Aaron does. I'm not sure what Hayden's... Well, Hayden, what do you do, mate? What do you do to switch off?
Exercise is a big one for me. And I was actually reading a book recently which talked about sort of this concept of emergency service workers coming home and not being able to switch off. And it's sort of like the way where you go to bed and your mind's still racing over and over. And a lot of the time what this is from like an incomplete adrenaline dump. And you can still have like your body sort of sympathetically charged. And you can essentially need to get that out before you can sort of really sort of go your mind at ease. So if you have the capacity to come home, if you're aware that you're still cognitively racing, it might be that you need to have some form of sympathetic dump and go for an exercise, or I know, as we said, Aaron likes to run a lot, but maybe just do some lifting or something else and get some heavy resistance training just to be able to put it out there. And then usually you'll find your mind will settle down and you can go to sleep much easier after something like that.
Those are some really great points that you all made. So that we don't take up too much of your time, we'll ask our final questions, which Corey will ask.
Awesome. What mistake have you made that has resulted in your greatest learning?
I'm going to jump in there. Mine's an attitude one. So I was relatively soon after graduating, so quite a new paramedic, and I worked with someone for a period of a couple of months who was the epitome of negativity and pessimism and sort of all the sort of negative culture associated with our job. And I found myself on one job trying to, I suppose, in my own head, appease this person for a patient who the perception was that they did not require an ambulance. I made some... decisions that should luck have gone a different way could have led to a negative patient outcome, and it was a whole different sort of slurry of bias in together that made me miss a whole lot of stuff. And now in the end the outcome was unchanged, I would say because of luck, frankly. But after the job, the moment of realization that I had of that this patient was quite sick made me realize that it had nothing to do with my capacity to assess the patient. It had nothing to do with the skills that are available to me. It had everything to do with my attitude, and more importantly, the attitude that I had developed through a working relationship with this person I was working with. And that made me feel sick to my core, because it was passionately who I did not want to be. And from then that helped shape me to be positive. And if someone comes to me with negativity, I'll sympathize with it, but usually I'll try and find something good within that situation to maybe change their lens as well. Cause it's, we don't turn up to work to be that person. Like that's not, we're not in this job to be negative. It's just, it's a concoction of culture and environmental things that go on with us within our lives that sort of lead us to be that. So I don't think anyone wants to be like that. But and that was a situation that made me realize that that's passionately who I don't want to be. And that's helped shape me for the rest of my career.
Yeah, mine's very similar to Hayden. It comes down to attitude and bias. I have ebbed and flowed through my career, and I can put my hand up and say that there have been periods where I've been very negative around the workplace and looked at things in a negative light and vented my frustration to coworkers. And that's a big regret of mine, is that, you know, you're becoming the person that you don't want to see in a workplace and jumping on the bandwagon and contributing to a negativity that festers within a group of people. And then you become part of the problem, and then it takes time for you to go, oh shit, actually, how did I get here? And this is not who I want to be. And you get into this place where all you see is the negative parts of a situation. And I do regret that, because I know that I contributed to that culture. And I do try very hard now to not let myself get that way and try and spread positivity and see things in an optimistic light and be that positive person within a workplace to try and reverse any negative culture that exists, because that's where you're going to get growth and steer a group of individuals away from a place of bad culture to a place of good culture.
Very nice. Well, thank you for that. That makes a lot of sense. And hopefully our listeners can take something away from that. What is one piece of advice that you would give to a student?
Just enjoy and be present when you go to work, where you are. What I mean by that is, you know, when you turn up to work, you can see there's, oh man, it's bloody night shift and we're getting flogged and there's lots of ramping. And I've dealt with Betty, the repeat caller, 6 times in the last week, and I can sit here and come up with 6 reasons why this is a bad situation. But my best piece of advice is try and ignore those things and sit down at the start of the shift and go, what are 5 things I'm thankful for within this workplace? And for me, it's, I'm thankful that I have a job during COVID. I'm thankful that I have a great bunch of people at work. I'm grateful that I get exceedingly good job security and I can do this to the day I retire. I'm grateful that my workplace and my management supports me. I'm grateful that I could have 8 weeks leave a year. And all these things, like, you got to see the positive parts of your workplace. And that's, I think, how you have longevity in the career. And try and keep that during your studentship, and try and keep that when you become a graduate, and try and keep that when you become experienced. And it'll stop you or reduce, hopefully, your burnout.
I'm going to go a bit more outside the box. I'm going to stay away from work for a second. So I would ask your students right now to have a think about where they are and what they're doing with their time right now. So if you can honestly say that you're putting in, you know, enough time to build and grow on the clinician that you want to be, to go from that student to a graduate to a professional paramedic, fantastic. But if you look at your time, you go, look, I'm only putting 10% of my current time of my life, you know, like your pie of time is only 10% is going towards what you want to become, then maybe that the passion or the drive is probably there for that. And maybe you want to rethink about what you're actually doing long-term for your life. And that goes for pretty much anything, you know, like if you're only putting in the bare minimum, then, you know, is it really for you at the same time? And if it's not, that's okay. If you can find ways that where you can get more motivation, you can create better habits and you can become invested, or is it, do you have to offload some things that are happening in your life? Like you said, some of your students are working full-time jobs. I did that as well, and it was terrible. I absolutely regretted having a full-time job whilst doing full-time uni and trying to do placements as well, because it inhibited my time to do more learning and more desk time to build the knowledge that I wanted straight out of uni. So have a think about what is taking up your time and if you can juggle things around so you can optimize what you really want in your life, because this is the time that you only have now. And then after that, once you've got your grades, once you've got your knowledge set, you're either going to be on the back foot or you're going to be really setting yourself up to be something really good, or the clinician that you want to be.
Yeah, I'll give it brief, but off the back of Aaron is advice to the students: work hard and be motivated. Find what works for you, find what drives you, understand why you're in this job and why you're still continuing to be in this job. Like Aaron said, if you have any issues with it, feel free to leave. Like I don't mean that in a negative way, but this job just isn't for everyone. But if you choose to stay, commit to it, and work hard. And I really like the advice Aaron gave about on placement, in terms of show initiative, and don't just wait for the opportunity to come to you. You go to the opportunity, you sort of go, hey, I really want to sort of jump in and do vitals or history taking or whatever aspect it is that you want to do, show initiative, and that will be felt and seen. And that'll serve you well throughout your career. But above all, enjoy what you do, because if you don't enjoy what you do, you'll be unhappy in your life. So if you choose to stay in this career, which I hope if you enjoy it, you do, we need very valuable people. We need fantastic people in this career, but enjoy it and get the most out of it and be happy with what you do.
You guys gave us some amazing points that I'm sure that Corey and I would definitely take on board, and I hope that our listeners will also take on board. So where can our listeners find you guys?
So we're on all the major podcast channels. So iTunes, Spotify, and a number of other ones. You can find us on Facebook. I think we're on Twitter. Are we still on Twitter, Aaron?
Yeah, we're still on Twitter. I thought Scott was doing the Twitter thing these days.
I'm not sure. Anyway, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. You can send us a message on all of those things. If you have ideas for podcasts or you have any questions, we're more than happy to answer any questions about anything, really.
Contact-wise, freeradicalsparamedicpodcast@gmail.com if you have any emails, feedback, or podcast ideas as well.
Or if you're in the Ipswich area or Toowoomba area now or Metro South, and you see one of us on placement, you can come say hi.
Well, thank you guys. We really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat to us tonight. So we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. If you want to connect with us and find out more about us, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.